Uh-oh. Solana went down again this week. Should you be worried? I mean, Ethereum never goes down, right? And if you're a Web3 Academy doer, then there's no doubt you got bags in Solana. Well, your old buddies Jay and Kyle are here today to tell you everything you need to know about the Solana outage and what we did with our SOL. GMGM, welcome to Web3 Academy, your one trusted source to capitalize on the next big phase of the internet. We are here to make sense of an on-chain world in constant transformation. I'm Jay Bird, along with my co-host, Kyle Reedhead, and we believe that atomic composability is going to change the world.
Don't worry, friends. This isn't all bearish news today. We started off with the Solana outages. There's plenty of big, good things happening in the space. Farcaster is having its moment, which is really exciting. We're going to cover everything going on there. GoDaddy, one of the biggest domain service platforms in the world, has partnered with ENS Domains. We're attaching websites to wallets now, which is really cool. Robinhood has a partnership with MetaMask and so much more. And then we've got some bullishness going on in markets that I'm going to talk about. So this is going to be a fun market watch session. And as usual, we'll do a bunch of agree, disagrees, some airdrops that are happening, a really big one actually. So get ready for that. Lots going on today. But before we do, as per usual, we like to take a second to take a deep breath and share some gratitude. So Jay, what are you grateful for?
Yeah, you're going to love this one, Kai. I'm grateful for Taylor Swift.
No.
T-Swift. What? I'm doing it. I'm finally doing it. I'm finally saying it. I'm jumping on the bandwagon. You know, I'll tell you why I'm grateful for T-Swift for many reasons. One, she's one of my wife's favorite artists, and I really do think she's an incredible role model for women. She makes great music that has a lot of meaning. She's not afraid to say what's on her mind. But I'm mostly grateful for her because this weekend is the Super Bowl, and I'm a big NFL fan, and my wife is not a big NFL fan by any means, but she is more excited to watch the Super Bowl this year than I am, quite honestly. And so I'm throwing down a bet on Polymarket, one of the crypto betting sites, where you can do the Taylor Swift parlay. Okay, here's the Taylor Swift parlay. You are betting that Travis Kelce scores a touchdown, that the Chiefs beat the San Francisco 49ers in the Super Bowl, and that after the game, Kelce and Swift will kiss on the stadium grounds and it will be confirmed by video or picture. So I'm throwing down a bet on the T-Swift parlay this weekend.
My girlfriend's a 49ers fan, so she's obviously pumped for the Super Bowl, not because of Taylor Swift, but she's like, I'm not doing that bet, not a chance, because obviously she doesn't want to bet that the Chiefs are going to win. So you now said that you think that atomic composability is going to change the world and you're grateful for Taylor Swift. This is a weird start to the episode, Jay. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit shook right now, but I'm just going to move forward. My gratitude is for the grapes that are grown in Mendoza. I'm currently in Mendoza, Argentina, which is basically like the Napa Valley of South America. It's where Malbec was, I believe, I don't think it was first started, but where like 95% of all the Malbec is made in the world. It's wine country. And I have been to, I don't even know, maybe 15 wineries in the last week. I'm a little bit, my brain's all over the place because I just feel like I'm hungover every day. So I don't even know what's going on anymore, but the wine is incredible. The wineries are amazing. And also not just wineries, the olive oil is also very nice here. So there's lots of good things happening over in Mendoza, and I'm just very grateful to be here. I'll be off to Chile in a couple of days, actually tomorrow, but was here for a week.
I love it. I love it, Kai. Before we jump into the show, a couple quick announcements. We are hiring right now. Do you have experience running ads on Google, on Twitter, on social media platforms? We're looking for an ad specialist. Check the link in the show notes and apply if that's you. Also, don't forget to sign up for a free newsletter. Comes out 3 times a week, keeps you up to date on everything you need to know in the space. So make sure you subscribe. Link is in the show notes. And as always, please give us a like on whatever platform you're listening to and check out this week's poll. We want to know, which chain do you spend more time on? Ethereum L2s or Solana? And whether you're listening on Spotify, you can answer the poll. If you're listening on YouTube or another platform, throw a comment in there to let us know which one you're using more, because we want to know. Kai, as we always do, let's start off with the market watch. What's going on in the markets this week?
Well, it's been a pretty wild day. This is Thursday as we record, as per usual. We've had a very bullish morning, which has been nice to see. Bitcoin is up over 45,000. So it is up. Let's just scroll down here a little bit. 2% on the day so far and 6.31% on the week. Of course, ETH and SOL not been left behind. ETH did go up to 2470 almost today. However, it's pulling back quite a bit, and we're now sitting at 2434. So up 0.4% today and up 6.7% on the week. And then Solana, which had a crazy morning, it was at 101 earlier this morning, and within an hour, it was at 105. So it had a nice little pump. It's sitting at 103 right now. So up 2.5% on the day so far and up almost 7% on the week. So a good day, a good morning, I guess, for crypto. We'll see what happens to the end of the day. I just did a market watch this week where I gave sort of my predictions on where we're going in the short term. So people are getting pretty hyped on Twitter right now, getting a bit bullish. I'm not bought into this run up just yet. I don't think that this is necessarily the next leg up, but let's see. We have some potential numbers and some potential like supports that we're sort of breaking through. So we'll talk about that now. The big thing that's going on here right now is Bitcoin has been basically suppressed below 45,000 for, I don't know, almost the last 2 months. We had a quick breakout with ETF and then went right back down. And actually, I guess it's been like 3 or 4 months. And so until we beat that 45,000 marker, which I have up on the screen here, then I really don't think we've broken out yet. Now, we did that this morning. Let's see if it holds. We need to close. A daily close is nice, but a weekly close is what we really want. And so there's still a few more days to go to see if this is actually a breakout on that side. So that's going on Bitcoin. On the Ethereum side of things, I shared this chart in the MarketWatch episode for the first time. This is basically just an ascending channel that we've had in Ethereum since it's very low back in July in 2022. So we've basically just been ranging in this channel for a while. And until we jump out of this, I mean, it's an ascending channel, so we're still going up. It's just sort of slowly but surely over time. But until we break out of this, I don't think we actually move into sort of the parabolic phase that we're all waiting for, the big bull market, the 2021-like bull market we had. And so we're still a ways from that. The number to be here would be around 2750, maybe 2800. If we surpass that, we break through that, okay, it's on. We're going to go to the moon. We're still a ways from that. And I just don't think we're getting there just yet. But let's see. And then the other side of things, Solana, I've already pointed this one out, which sort of broke out of its wedge pattern last week. We sort of bounced off that and it looks pretty good there. The next stop for Solana, if we do take this next leg up, is like $140 and it should get there pretty quick. So that's really cool. It's 40% increase from where we're at right now. ETH would be about 3,000. And so I think that's the next leg up. And then we probably sit around those numbers for a little bit, just like we've done at these numbers. When we get there, I don't know, check out my MarketWatch episode where I go into more details on when I actually think we get there. I'm not sure that it's right now. We'll see. We have to get some things to confirm. My main reason is just like, usually at this point in the cycle, we have a big pullback. We haven't really had that. I mean, Solana's been like a 38% pullback. So that one's big. But like Bitcoin, ETH are under 30%. We usually have something much bigger. So they're around like 20. And so I don't know. We'll see what happens. Look, we could definitely just go up from here. It's a bit of intuition is the main reason. And just looking back at historical trends. But things could change. And I'll actually talk about what is changing and why the market structure could be changing, which I'm going to share right now. So let's talk about some ETF news because, you know, we just don't talk about ETFs enough on this episode, do we, Jay?
We love ETFs.
Yeah, right. We didn't until about January 15th, but now we do. So anyway, so big news coming out of the Ethereum ETF side of things. So if you guys remember the months leading up to the Bitcoin ETF, January 14th or whatever that was, the approval there was like 2-3 months of just all the companies doing amendments to their applications and then meeting with the SEC and going back and forth. And Jay and I talked about it every single week on the roll-up. That has just started for the first time here on Ethereum. So for the Ethereum ETF. So ARK, which I believe is the one that, which is 21 shares, they have a Bitcoin ETF. They are the one that I think has first dibs on approval, which is May 23rd. They have just done their first amendment to their application and sent that back into the SEC, basically doing a bunch of the things that they had to change for Bitcoin, where it's like in cash and blah, 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 like all these like random things. They're now like sort of amending and making those changes to the Ethereum one. So that it basically matches the same as what the Bitcoin one was. So that just happened yesterday. So that's kind of a first here, which is good. It's news that like we're going to start progressing and we'll probably see a bunch of these over the next couple months leading up to that May 23rd date. Interesting about this one is ARK in their amendment, they added in the ability to stake the underlying ETH, which the ETF experts are all basically betting that this is not going to be the case in the first go around here. So like if the SEC does approve this ETF, they're probably not going to allow them to stake the ETH. There's just added contract risk to that. They don't really get it. There's potential slashing. Like it was hard enough to just to get Bitcoin ETF approved. Now to do something where they're going to stake and, you know, they see that as leverage. It's just probably that doesn't happen. But in the First Amendment anyway, ARK has put that in. So likely gets removed, but if not, that's going to be just nuts if that actually happens. Basically, what would happen is the ETF provider would take in the ETH, then they would not only earn on their, you know, 0.2% or whatever fee they charge, they're earning like 4% on the ETH that they're holding, which would be nuts. Or they might share that. They could give dividends to the holders of the ETF. That would be completely unheard of, unprecedented, and would be just so bullish. Anyway, I don't think that's going to happen. So just wanted to share that. Okay, moving along. So big news on the Bitcoin side of things. So first of all, yesterday, we just saw for the first time that Fidelity, which is one of the largest asset managers in the world, who also has their own ETF, they have recently put their like general sort of like mainstream purpose ETFs that they have, where it just holds a basket of things. They have put their crypto, their Bitcoin ETF, sorry, into those ones. So these are the ones where like everyone just holds onto them for their like retirement savings. People have no idea what they're doing. They just come into a bank and they're like, yeah, I want to, you know, put some money in my 401k or my RSP, depending on what country you're in. And they just like, okay, do you want the risky one, the medium one, or like the conservative one? And you just sort of choose one, and it has like a X percent expectation that you'll get a return each year. Most boomers use this, and like newer people into the world of investing use this. And so crypto, the Bitcoin ETF, is now included in that. So in the conservative ETF for Fidelity, there is a 1% allocation to the Bitcoin ETF. In the medium one, there's 2%. And in the sort of like higher risk one, there's a 3% allocation to the Bitcoin spot ETF. So what this means is people all around the US are now investing in Bitcoin and they don't even know it. So this is like passive flows coming into crypto. This is the power of ETFs here that I think a lot of people aren't wrapping their heads around. There's only so many people that actually care about buying Bitcoin, right? But what this is people that don't care at all about buying Bitcoin. They're just investing in their own retirement as they usually would. And now all of a sudden there's an allocation to Bitcoin as a result of that. That doesn't happen unless Bitcoin is wrapped as an ETF. The same will likely happen with Ethereum at some point. But this just drives a lot of ongoing demand and basically just never leaves. These are the things that people don't sell. When it's your retirement fund, it's just like, or pension fund, et cetera. It's just like, you just kind of buy it, you hold it for as many, many years as you can. And people just hold this for like most of their life, right? That's what's happening here with this ETF. And this is just the first one. I'm sure many more are about to come out that are doing this over the coming weeks to months. So that's really cool. So I've put a chart on the screen here of GPTC's daily flows coming out of it, which were, I mean, obviously very massive. I think the largest day was a $640 million outflow in one day. That is getting close to zero. We're not completely done, but we're getting very close to that outflows being done. And then we just have inflows moving forward, which all nine of the ETFs are getting in consistent inflows on a daily basis. So that is really good news. And then we have one little moon math session here that Vance Spencer did. He's basically looking at the inflows of Bitcoin ETFs and how that will affect the market. So what he estimated is that currently there are between 1.5 million and 1.8 million Bitcoin that has been traded in the past couple of years. So most of the Bitcoin that people hold are just like, you know, MicroStrategy. It's bought, never traded, never sold, just like goes into a black hole. The ETFs, most of that just going to a black hole. Most of the big time holders of Bitcoin, they've just held it for like 10 years. You know what I mean? And so a lot of people are just what we call hodling. So there's only about 1.5 million to 1.8 million of the supply of Bitcoin that is actually traded on an ongoing basis. So that's not a ton. And it's not a ton when you consider that currently the Bitcoin ETF is on pace to accumulate 300 to 500,000 Bitcoin per year on a yearly basis. And we're still in the fairly, I would say, lower inflow area amounts of these ETFs, right? If we start to pick up prices and we get into that sort of bull market that we think is coming, these inflows will likely go much higher. So what he's looking at is about an average of 300 to 500. But if we get into sort of bull market phase, he's like maybe 1 million Bitcoin per year, which means that we're just a couple years away from the ETFs basically sucking up all of the existing supply of Bitcoin that is being traded. And so when that happens, you have a ridiculous supply crunch as long as that demand continues. And that means number go up a lot. And so that's just one thing to think about. I mean, there's other ways that obviously people take tokens off the market, more so on the Ethereum side of things, which we're going to do a pro report soon on, which is if the Ethereum ETFs get approved, the same situation happens here. You have X amount of Ethereum that's getting pulled off the market that's going into ETFs. But then if you think of the way ETH works, you also have how much ETH, 25% of all ETH is currently staked. How much of that is restaked, which we'll talk about later in this episode. How much of that is collateral in DeFi applications? And then how much of that is being burnt on a daily basis? So like when you talk about a supply crunch, the Bitcoin story is big. It gets real big when you talk about Ethereum. Speaking of Ethereum, just one more cool piece of news we got to announce. We've talked a lot about the EIP 4844, which is the upgrade coming to Ethereum that will reduce fees on L2s by around an order of magnitude. So it should be about 10x, probably going to be a bit less than that, but somewhere around there. The final testnet went through yesterday for this. And so now they've set a date, March 13th, this will go live and L2s will become close to 10x cheaper. So Base, Optimism, Arbitrum, all that are going to be pennies and maybe even fractions of a penny in a little over a month from now. So that is, I think, going to be a really big deal. It should drive a lot more activity on top of these L2s, which also, what does that do? The more activity on L2s, the more ETH that's get bridged to L2s, which also goes into the black hole. It never leaves the L2 once it's there. Things most people don't bridge back from an L2 to the L1. So this is just another way that ETH is being like kind of sucked into something that just never leaves and taking it off the supply. So there's a lot of really solid supply dynamics happening right now, which is what generally sets you up for a big bull market. I mean, we have the Bitcoin halving also coming in just a couple months in April. And so generally we have these crazier bull markets after these sort of supply dynamics happen and more demand comes in. So we're setting up for something to be really, really big this year and moving into next year. So exciting times to be in the crypto space, I would say.
Let's go. What a very nice and bullish market watch you just gave us there, Kai. Feeling good. You mentioned Solana prices up. So let's take a look at what happened with the Solana outage. I mean, you all know now that didn't really impact the price because the price has gone up since then. But let's make sure you guys are up to date on why was there an outage and does this matter? So on Tuesday, Solana went down for about 5 hours. The Solana engineers, they identified the issue pretty quickly and right away developed a software patch and then rolled it out to the validator networks. All these node operators need to upgrade their validator and they need 80% of the validators to do this upgrade in order for Solana to get back on. Once that happened, it happened within 5 hours, it was turned back on and boom, kind of a bit of a blip that I think nobody really cared about, to be honest. There was pretty much no market impact. Like Solana itself was actually up 1% on the day. So didn't really impact Sol. NFTs on Sol were mostly even. Meme coins were all over the place, but meme coins are always all over the place. So the market shook it off, basically kind of no news. And now we all reset our calendars to, what are we on? We're on day two now since Solana has gone down last.
Yeah, interestingly, if it would have went 18 more days without an outage, they would have had a full year of no outages and they could have removed the beta from Solana. So technically, I guess, and I don't even know how this is or like where this is true or where this comes from, but you need a year of it working without having an outage for it to come out of beta. This might just be a narrative. I'm not actually sure. But anyway, we need 18 more days for it to be the full year. Didn't happen. Look, sucks. This is not something that is, I guess, generally acceptable for a blockchain in the long run. Like whole point in this is permissionless, open, transparent, and the ability to just like transact at any time. And you couldn't for 5 hours. There was literally no blocks for 5 hours. That's a big deal, especially if a company is building on top of Solana, right? Like how did this impact Helium, the Deepin protocol where you're getting Wi-Fi? Like how did this impact a lot of different things? So it does matter, but we're still early days. They're still obviously in beta. They're still working through a lot of things. Solana is processing so many transactions. It's actually ridiculous. And so like they're still doing way better than every other chain in terms of transactions and throughput. So like these things are expected. And even all the developers in Solana have all said, we're going to have more outages. It's going to happen. There's going to be bugs in something that's very new. I definitely was not too concerned. I was kind of hoping Solana would crash because then I'd buy a bunch. But I think most people at this point are just like, whatever, it's fine. And also in a bull market, you know, bad news doesn't ever really impact much. If it was in a bear market, then it would have dumped a ton, I'm sure. In a bull market, people just don't really care.
A lot of people are asking Kai why it took 5 hours to fix this, you know, feeling like, hey, what's going on? Like we get that it went down, but 5 hours is a long time. As you said, it impacts a lot of businesses. Why did it take so long?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a feature, not a bug, because people also go, well, Solana is decentralized, and I think is centralized. And I think the thing to understand here is if it was centralized, they could have this thing back up and running in 15 minutes. They just literally turn it off, turn it back on after they make the patch, which they had the patch within, I don't know, I think it was like 30 minutes or something. Now, the reason that this took so long to come back, why did it take 5 hours, is all the validators had to go and review the upgrade that Solana Labs made and actually approve it. And they don't have to approve it. And so you could even see some of them in the Discord. People were going, why is it not back up? Why is it not back up? Like, why haven't you upgraded your validators? And a bunch of them just responded like, look, just because Solana Labs gave a patch to this doesn't mean we're just going to go and use it. We don't care. We need to go and review it ourselves or write our own code to fix this. And so, you know, there's thousands of validators and they need to all review this themselves and upgrade. So that is more proof that Solana is actually decentralized. If it wasn't, if this was a database, you could just turn off, turn it back on, like a Nintendo 64 back in the day.
Blow on it real quick. Just the old blow in the cartridge and then put it back in and hard reset.
So anyway, like if this continues to happen, obviously there's cause for concern, but I wouldn't be concerned right now.
But I think, as you said, it is important to recognize that this, we should expect this. And we actually have a hot take in our agree disagree section today that we're going to discuss and break down, because Solana right now is prioritizing the just transactions at scale that nobody else is doing. And that means that they're constantly bumping up against a limit. And that limit is going to get passed sometimes and they're going to go down. But every time it goes down, it gives them an opportunity to discover why and fix it. And thankfully, that's happening now before we get to mainstream adoption. This is part of innovation. This is what we should expect. And it's not necessarily a bad thing.
And Solana and ETH have just taken different roadmaps to get to where they're going. Like when Ethereum gets congested, the cost goes to like $200 to do a transaction, which is ridiculous. Solana, that never happens. It just happens to go down every once in a while, which is also unfortunate and ridiculous. But look, they're both focused on different things. One is trying to get as much throughput as possible. One's trying to remain as decentralized as possible. They're both going to become very decentralized and very scalable in the future as they both work towards their goals.
Totally. Kai, have you seen Farcaster on your Twitter feed at all this week?
Well, nobody's
talking about Farcaster, right? Farcaster's blowing up right now. It's all the rage. It's all the talk. They've hit all-time highs in daily active users. I got a chart up on the screen right now if you're watching on YouTube. And this thing is just parabolic since the start of February, when it literally was, they were hovering around like probably 3,000 daily active users. And then over the last basically week, they've gone to over 40,000 daily active users. Just absolutely nuts. A lot of people are saying that maybe this is because of Farcaster Frames. I don't think so yet. Like, yes, Farcaster Frames is super exciting. We talked about that last week's rollup. We also released a newsletter. So if you want to learn more about what is Farcaster Frames, go check out that newsletter. We'll link to it in the show notes. But I think the main reason here is two things. One, Farcaster last week announced that they were free in the US, and then this week announced that they were free in, I don't even remember the exact countries, but about 10 other leading countries. So Farcaster used to be $5 per year. It's not a tremendous amount to pay for, but that does limit a lot of degens and also, unfortunately, a lot of bots from coming in. And now that they're open for free, you're going to have a lot more degens and, unfortunately, a lot more bots coming in. And so that is what is leading to this rise. Also, Farcaster has now a incentive program where you can get degen a... Funny, I'm saying degen so many times. You can get degen a token as a reward, a daily reward, if you post on Farcaster 3 times per day and you get engagement on your posts, then you get degen rewards. And that has led degen to be up. It's up like 95%, over 160 million market cap now. So you're seeing a lot of speculation happening on Farcaster and a lot of people jumping into a hype cycle. So I don't know about you, Kai, but my hype cycle alarms are going off right now.
I was just going to say, my alarm's going off for sure. Anytime you see a chart like this, one, it's not sustainable. And two, just Farcaster's, what they're building is amazing. I have nothing against that. I think they're building something really cool. Their app is incredible. It is really good. There is good conversations on Farcaster. So like, don't get me wrong, it's great. But there's not 40,000 real people that are on there actually being active. When, as soon as you open it up for free, you bring in bots. Web3 is just filled with these bots and airdrop farmers. And people know they can farm degen. There's probably other tokens that will come. There's a bunch popping up now on Farcaster. Look, this idea of being able to integrate tokens into social is pretty cool, right? Like they can basically just, because your account is on chain and is a wallet, you can just like someone likes a post on Farcaster and you can auto just like give them a token. Like you can't do this on Twitter. You can't do this on Facebook, Instagram, et cetera. So like there are some really cool things at play here. And I think you need these random degens and farmers and stuff to come in to go and like play with them and test them and see how it all works and is it scalable and et cetera. So like, I think that's what they're doing here by opening this up is like, we know this is a bunch of bots. We know this is a bunch of farmers, but we just want to like see what happens when a bunch of people come in and like, let's start to play with it. Many of these are probably real people. They're just like people that are not going to bring real engagement and real content onto Farcaster. So the one thing that this worries me of is like, look, when someone uses, I don't know, Aave or whatever DeFi protocol, right? Think of Solana right now. Everyone's using MarginFi and Camino, et cetera. And you put in this like rewards incentive where a bunch of farmers come in and they start putting their capital into these protocols. It doesn't impact me as a user. In fact, it makes my experience better because there's more liquidity in those protocols so that it becomes cheaper to use, right? And so like, that's all great. Farmers can actually be a really good thing for the allocation of capital, right? The problem I think is when it's a social network, when there are a bunch of farmers on my social network and bots, it does impact my experience in a negative way, not in a positive way. And so I'm just a little concerned about what happens here and how what they're planning to do on this. I just remember when Lens had this rumor of them having a token. So Lens Protocol, the sort of main competitor of Farcaster, they had a rumor last year about launching a token. And we were heavily using Lens at the time. And all of a sudden, our engagement went up like 20, 30x. And I was like, okay, this is not real. We started checking out, like doing some tracking and stuff to see who was coming off site. And it was like next to no one. So it was all fake. And we had these fake comments, fake likes, whatever. And then eventually, and this is all farmers, once they said, hey, we're not launching a token, this is true, it all went away. And I was like, okay, this is a bit ridiculous. And so I'm just a little concerned to see what happens to Farcaster, because Farcaster had been just predominantly crypto native people. Like you have Balaji, you have Vitalik all on there and just like only crypto native people. So it was like a really great way to speak to people that there's not a bunch of bots and stuff like on Twitter. And I'm just afraid when you open it up for free like this and you start promising tokens, I don't know what that's going to do for the social network. So, I mean, we'll see it play out, but I wouldn't get too psyched. I mean, you can't invest in Farcaster anyway because you don't have a token, but I'm just a little bit concerned. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. Social networks are meant to be places where we see what we all care about, right? The social decides. We decide what rides to the top. If our behavior is impacted by money, then we are going to behave in a different way than we would behave if it's just impacted by our feelings or our connections or our likes, right? So I think the social science of this is going to be fascinating to see play out. I think both Kai and I, very bullish on decentralized social, really believe in that space. It's just so early. It's fun to see all these experiments and see the impact. The other thing that was a cool experiment is Base announced that they wanted to reward the 20,000 earliest Farcaster users. And because Farcaster exists on wallets, they can do this. They can easily go and see who are the first 20,000 wallets that signed up for Farcaster. And they rewarded them with some TYBG tokens. You got like 8,000 TYBG tokens. Web3 Academy, we got this because we were early on Farcaster. It's worth like a buck. So this was not an airdrop meant to create a bunch of hype or something like that. But this is Base. It actually came from the Base Institute. And this is them experimenting with different ways to reward early on chain users. And it also was a way to get this token that they've launched into the hands of people that they see as being the ones that they want to have this token. So really cool to see on-chain permissionless rewards happening in live time. A lot more will come out in that as brands start to learn that this is possible with wallets as your login. Next, let's go to some Web2 news, Kai. GoDaddy is partnering with ENS. What's going on here?
This is pretty cool. So GoDaddy, for those that don't know, is where you buy your domain names for your websites, right? So we have w3academy.io that came from, I don't know if we bought on GoDaddy actually, but I think
we bought it on GoDaddy.
It's massive. And then they partner with ENS. ENS is Ethereum name service. So this is where you can buy kyleread.eth, for example, and I can make my wallet instead of the OX, blah, 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 blah. It is my ENS name instead, okay? So ENS is to wallets what DNS is to like your IP addresses for sites, right? So websites are usually like a number, but humans don't do well with that. So we've created DNS. And then obviously humans don't do well with these 40 whatever letter word wallets, so we created ENS for that. Now, an ENS domain is also can be used to direct to a website. The problem is that most browsers don't actually interop with this. And so you need to use like the MetaMask browser, and you can put in like Vitalik.eth, for example, and you can go to Vitalik's website. But it doesn't work if you do it in Google Chrome. And it's probably really tough to get these browsers to do that. So what ENS has done is partnered with GoDaddy. And so what you can now do is connect your ENS domain to your DNS domain. And so what you basically get here is the URL to your website also now becomes a wallet address. And I think that's quite interesting, and vice versa. And so, look, I don't think that this like goes mainstream today or something. It's not like a bunch of GoDaddy users are just excited to use ENS. That's not the case. Again, this is a very niche thing within the crypto world. And so like, don't let these things get you, you know, it's great marketing or whatever, but like, it's not that big of a deal for most of the world. But what it does do is just like, it's another kind of in with the trad world, right? With the Web2 world, and just like kind of making those connections easier and easier and easier. And the more we sort of like infiltrate the Web2 world, one little thing at a time, the more Web3 just sort of takes over. And so I think this is really cool. People from GoDaddy can start to learn about this. Obviously, the staff there are now like, whoa, what's ENS? Like, what's crypto? And they're probably all going down this rabbit hole now after this partnership. So it just onboards more people. And then, of course, it's cool to have your wallet associated with a website. And I think we'll probably see some cool innovations as a result of that, you know, whatever that might be. So whether Nike or something all of a sudden goes, okay, Nike.com is now our wallet, right? And you can send money to it or vice versa. Like, it's pretty cool, and you could see something coming from it. So interesting, and we love these kind of partnerships.
Gradually and then suddenly. These are the things that are all part of the gradual process that'll lead to the sudden moments.
One more big partnership that came out of the Web2 and Web3 world this week was MetaMask and Robinhood. What's going on
here, Kai? This one's not as big, but what it is, so MetaMask and Robinhood now have a bit of partnership. Basically, what you can do is inside the MetaMask app wallet, you can now buy crypto assets directly through Robinhood. So you can already do this with something like PayPal. So you could also connect your credit card into MetaMask and just buy crypto. You can do it via PayPal, and now you can just do it via Robinhood. So this is just a way for Robinhood to attract fees so that people are using their exchange instead of, you know, PayPal or something else, and then just making it easier and easier to get access to crypto. Some people don't have PayPal, but they do have Robinhood, and now they can basically do this super easily. If you didn't have PayPal, then previously you would have had to go set a PayPal account. You usually have to do like some KYC stuff, and then it would work. But if you already have a Robinhood, you don't have PayPal, now you can just do it straight through Robinhood. So again, just opening the width of the pipeline to flood fiat into crypto, which we love.
I love it. Sounds great. Let's go over to Magic Eden making some moves this week. They announced the Creators Alliance. So they're gearing up. We've talked a lot about Magic Eden is working on a ETH marketplace, and they're also working on a cross-chain wallet. And they're gearing up to that launch. And so they've created this Creator Alliance with leading NFT projects across the Ethereum ecosystem. Most notably, they partnered with Pudgy Penguins and with Azuki, both making big announcements and waves within their own communities. Basically, what this Creators Alliance does is it aligns a bunch of leading Ethereum NFT projects to say that they are going to make Magic Eden's new ETH marketplace, whenever it launches, their preferred marketplace. It also gets Magic Eden's team directly in contact with a lot of the leading NFT projects so that they can basically advise each other and cross-collaborate and discuss, hey, what do you need for your community? And the other thing is that it is very clear that OpenSea has lost, and well, at least right now, it feels like it's lost. So we don't really have a leading marketplace that is for creators and communities. We have Blur, which is a leading marketplace for traders, and I think we'll continue to play that role and service that customer. But we don't have a marketplace anymore. We kind of had OpenSea, we had Magic Eden on Sol, but we don't really have one that is they're for creators, that is enforcing creator royalties, and that is building with communities in mind. And that is clearly what Magic Eden is trying to do here with these partnerships. And so, look, I think I'm very bullish on where Magic Eden is going with this. Very excited. I also think
that we could see a future where one thing that's very clear about, if you look through the Creator Alliance, all of these NFT projects, they one thing they all have in common, they're all IP-based projects. And all IP-based projects are gearing up to how do you spread your IP in the biggest way possible? And there's the Web 2 way to do it. I mean, there's the pre-Web way to do it, like Pudgy make physical products, make toys, right? And there's lots that are trying to do that. There's the Web 2 way to do it, which is you make video content, you make TV shows, you stream that stuff, you make GIFs, you spread it in that way. But there's the next way to do this is going to be the metaverse and the new way that we all start to connect and use these characters to represent ourselves in a new digital way that doesn't exist yet. And I think Magic Eden sees that along with all these projects. They're all gearing up to that. And so I think that's where Magic Eden wants to play, is in that space of when we all spend time in this new digital world, whether it be Pudgy World or whether it be a Yuga game, how do you buy and sell NFTs in there? How do you trade assets within there? And Magic Eden wants to be that marketplace.
And the NFT marketplace space is the one space in crypto that is just like, it feels like a blank canvas still. It's been going on for a while. There's been a crazy story, if you followed along with marketplace over the last 2 years, of just like disruption and change and innovation. But it's the one thing where you just like, you don't know who the clear winner is, and you don't even know what it's really going to look like. We were pretty early into the idea of L2s and how we thought it was going to look like, and it seems to be unfolding almost exactly how we envisioned. And so like, that one was somewhat easy for me to see. With NFT marketplaces, I can't wrap my head around it at all. And I think part of that is just because NFTs in general, we still don't know exactly how we're going to use them, right? There's just so many ways, I guess, too, whereas it's very different for the rest of crypto, but it's a weird space, but very interesting to watch.
Talk about very interesting and also very innovative and hella confusing, to be honest, is what the heck is ERC 404? Everybody is talking about ERC 404. Whenever you see somebody talking about a new token standard, which is what ERC, those are token standards, everybody gets hyped. Everybody excited. It's, you know, new innovation. What does it mean? Okay, well, let me break down ERC 404 in the simplest way I possibly can. First off, this was developed by the Pandora team. This is a team that launched the NFT collection. And this is an unofficial token standard. I want to be clear about that. It's unofficial, whereas ERC 721 and ERC 20 are official token standards because they've been vetted, they've been used for a while. So this is very experimental. Basically, what this new token standard aims to do is bridge the divide between fungible tokens and NFTs. And the main divide is liquidity and fractionalization, right? You have this problem that exists right now within the NFT ecosystem of it's difficult to sell an NFT because there isn't enough liquidity, because a lot of NFTs cost $3,000 and there's not a lot of people looking to throw around $3,000. You can't buy a fraction of an NFT. I shouldn't say that you can't do it. You can with some of the NFT DeFi products, NFTFi, Blend, all these different products that allow you to fractionalize an NFT, but you can't do it natively within the token standard. And that's exactly what ERC 404 aims to do, is it enables you to treat the token as either a fungible token or as an NFT-based token. And it also enables really unique burn and mint mechanics. So look, super experimental, super early. We'll see where this leads. There's a lot of hype around this, like definite hype cycle right now. Like Pandora NFTs have gone to, I think they're at like 2 ETH or something like that, maybe even 3 ETH.
I feel like it's even more now, yeah.
Yeah, total hype cycle. Like this is experimental. If you're a project that wants to build on ERC 404, by all means, go for it. But it's an unofficial token standard. Make sure you get somebody to audit your smart contracts. There's a lot that needs to happen here before this gets to mainstream, if it even does get to mainstream. I want to just talk about a couple of ways that this could be used.
The Pandora rocket is at 11.5 ETH this morning, just so you're aware. Wild, eh?
Wild.
Imagine.
Wild. So
$256 million market cap for this thing.
It just doesn't
matter. It's been around for like, since what? Like February 2nd?
February 2nd? Yeah. So
a couple different use cases for this. Like basically what this allows you to do is when somebody purchases a full token, a full fungible token. So let's say you purchased one ETH, if ETH used this token standard, then an NFT automatically gets minted to your wallet. So in the opposite way, what you could do is you could purchase a fraction of a token, you purchase 0.1 of a token. And as a result, you wouldn't get the NFT burned to your wallet, but you would have ownership of that NFT. You would have a fractional ownership of it because you have 0.1 of that token. So it allows these interesting mechanics. I think this is particularly relevant in gaming. This is where I think we'll see this the most, because what happens a lot in gaming is you play a game and you earn points in the game, and then you use those points to purchase things in the game, to craft new items in the game. Like let's say you play a game and you get 10 points, and then as a result of 10 points, you can craft a sword. Well, imagine doing that on chain with ERC-404. You could now do that in a native way where you earn the token in the game and ERC-404. And once you have a full token, then you can craft an item which automatically mints an NFT to your wallet. So you can see how this connection between the two can lead to a lot of just easier ways that developers can make this connection between a fungible token and an NFT.
Love the innovation. I mean, we need innovations around tokens, right? Tokens is really everything that we do here on a chain. And so if we can make them more expressive, then we can innovate better and also limit risks, right? Like a lot of the things that we talked about, especially in regards to like fractionalization, you can do, but you add risk when it's a bunch of different smart contracts and you got to use some other companies. Whereas if it can be it all in the same token standard, that it makes it easier, cheaper, less risk. So like these are all just innovations that will improve upon each other. So really cool to see that. I wouldn't kind of buying a Pandora though for 11 point whatever.
No, definitely not. Hype cycle all the way. Let's airdrop them like it's hot. Kai, we got 5 airdrops to bring everyone up to date on this week. First up, we've got Wormhole. What's going on with Wormhole?
Yeah, so Wormhole was one we flagged back in December or November, whenever we wrote the Solana airdrop guide. And we said you can use, I think it's called Mayan Finance or whatever, and you can bridge from ETH to Sol or other chains, and it uses Wormhole in the background. And so if you did that, you would likely farm the Mayan airdrop if that ever comes, as well as a likely airdrop from Wormhole. But Wormhole yesterday announced that they are actually doing an airdrop. So Wormhole, for those of you who don't know, is a bridge, and it's been around for a while. It actually had one of the biggest hacks a couple of years ago, but they've since improved a lot and made a lot of changes to what their protocol is, and it's becoming a bigger thing within the ecosystem. And now they are looking to decentralize, of course. And so they're launching a token coming soon. We don't know the date yet, but the snapshot was taken February 7th. And so if you used Wormhole previous to that, then you will likely get an airdrop. I'm not sure if there's like a minimum or something. All we know is I think it's 17 or 11% of the entire token allocation is going towards users. So those that actually participated and used Wormhole. So hopefully many of you participated in our Solana airdrop guide, and you will now be getting this airdrop. I think this one's likely to be pretty big. They're a well-funded, well-capitalized company that is a big piece of infrastructure in the space. So I would imagine it's going to be pretty good, but we don't know yet how they're going to tier it out. So like, is it based off the amount of that you've bridged? Is it based off the amount of times you bridged? Like those are things we don't know. We should get that in the coming days. I would think generally this happens pretty quick. So we'll keep you posted. Again, watch out for any fake scam links and stuff. Wormhole Crypto is their Twitter. So just get all your information from that, or just keep an eye on Web3 Academy. We'll make sure to share it for you as well.
Love it. Next up, Black Panther announces they're doing a token launch. What's going on here?
Yeah, so this is a token that they're launching called Black, and they are a asset management protocol that's being built on top of Injective. And so they are launching their token to Injective stakers. Did we do an Injective? I think we did an Injective guide.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, we did. And I don't know if this one was on it, actually. I can't remember. But either way, as long as you staked, we said you'd probably get a bunch of airdrops. And if you are staking your Injective, you will be eligible to get, was it 10% of the total supply? Well, actually, it was 10% of the total supply. Interesting, what happened here is they announced this on the 6th of February. The community complained and said that wasn't enough, which is outrageous to me. A bunch of people that have probably like transacted on this thing like one time. Now, I don't know. Maybe it actually is a big part of the community that, you know, that is really important to us, that was putting a complaint, but a bunch of people complained and said, we want more, we want a bigger airdrop. And so 2 days later, Black Panther came out, maybe even 1 day later, came out and said, okay, we've readjusted. We are going to put a bigger proportion to community incentives. And it's now 30% that is going to go towards the community for airdrops and launchpad, et cetera. So I guess if you want a little bit more money, just get loud. And some of these applications will fold and do it. I don't think this one's going to be a massive one by any means. I think they're pretty small, but congrats to those. I don't stake any injective. I don't hold any injective, so I didn't get this.
Eigenlayer has opened up for deposits this week. What's going on?
Yeah, so we warned everyone about this last week. I think it's almost might be capped, so you might be too late. This shuts down on Friday, which is when most people will be listening to this. But hopefully, we warned everyone last week, they did open it up. If you want to show the next chart, within 24 hours, this thing went nuts. So there was about $2 billion worth of ETH staked in Eigenlayer. And within like 24, 48 hours, that jumped from $2 billion to like $4.5 billion. And so pretty wild to see the demand for restaking, which, I mean, we've been saying for a while now since we've been talking about restaking, this is going to be a big deal. Now, part of this is because people want extra APY. A big part of this is people want the airdrop. There is an airdrop coming here. But the big reason is just like, this is the next big meta in crypto. Staking was 2022 and 2023, right? Lido, Rocket Pool, we heard about all these. We did pro reports on these. Everyone's been staking. It's been great. Restaking is the next big thing. And Ethereum is at the forefront of that, as it usually is for most big metas. Eigenlayer, is really the leader in this. It's really like the only one in this at the moment. So this is a really big deal. And we're going to hear a lot more about Eigenlayer in the future. I think it closes on Friday, and then we don't know when it opens again. But the fact that it's going to be about $5 billion by Friday is pretty wild. Quickly, becoming one of the biggest protocol in crypto.
Ooh, hot take right there. But I would tend to agree with that. Last up, the airdrop that happened this week that nobody can sell.
Yeah, so Dim, again, we talked about this last week. It actually went live. So you didn't have to do anything, so don't click any links. It's just in your wallet, but it's in the DIM network. So you need to go and add the DIM into your MetaMask or your Coinbase wallet or whatever. If you just go to the Dimension Twitter, you can see the link that you can go to, and then you just add it. It's on their page, and it just adds into your existing, you know, MetaMask, Coinbase wallet, and then the tokens are already in there. And so you don't have to claim anything, you have to do anything. So don't fuck this up and click some random links and get rugged. But what's interesting is Dimension is a brand new chain, I guess you can call it, and it's its own network. And there's nothing on it yet. And so it's very difficult to get rid of your DIM because you can't really sell it for anything because there's no apps on this thing. And so there is a way to do it, but it literally is like, I don't know, 15 to 20 steps. Yeah, here's a Yuga.eth showed how to do it. 15 steps. And you have to, like, it is not easy. Like, I have not done it and I won't do this. It is nuts. You've got to bridge. You've got to swap. You've got to buy different tokens to make this. Like, it is insane. And so the other option is you can just stake your DIM or just wait. Some of the centralized exchanges are going to add this soon. And so you'll be able to just not swap, but you'll be able to just like transfer it from your wallet to a centralized exchange and then sell it there if you'd like. And so crypto.com should be coming soon. I heard some rumors that Binance has it, but I'm Canadian, so I can't use Binance. So I actually don't know. But the reason it's gone up in price is, one, I think it is a good technology, but it's at like $1 billion market cap. But it's mainly because just no one can sell it at the moment. And so I would not be buying. I mean, look, I don't want to give financial advice, so do whatever you want. I'm sure this is going to be a great technology in the future. I just think the moment that this is people can actually sell it, it's probably going to dump, but let's see.
I know you.
Although actually, you can stake. No, I got two portions of two different wallets, and I'll probably stake one of them and then sell the other one, because supposedly if you stake this, you're going to be eligible for a bunch of airdrops that then happen and occur on the Dimension network, kind of like the injective play, right? Or the TIA play. So if a bunch of apps are building on Dimension, then maybe they'll do airdrops as well. So let's see. But
all right, time for our favorite segment. Every week, we pick a bunch of tweets from our community and from friends in the ecosystem, and we agree, disagree, or explain each one. Kai, up first, from Duo9, we have, are liquid staking tokens creating a Ponzi? I restake ETH and I get staked ETH. I restake staked ETH and I get LP ETH. I restake LP ETH and I get XX ETH to infinity. Staked ETH lost its peg versus ETH in the past. This will turn into a giant crash one day.
So first of all, if you can see the screen, you can see that this guy has laser eyes. I'm pretty sure this guy is like a Bitcoiner that just doesn't understand the innovations occurring on top of Ethereum and other smart contract platforms. So I would, one, already going to disagree, even if I didn't read what he said. But number two, this is completely not true. A Ponzi is when the money doesn't actually exist, right? People have to keep buying. If there's no more demand, then all of a sudden it spirals out. That's not the case here. There is real value. There is real revenues that are coming with each of these. And so the APYs, the extra money that you get when you stake and the extra money you get when you restake, it's real revenues that are coming here. The risks are also not just like if people leave, the thing doesn't spiral out like Terra Luna, for example, or other Ponzi's, you just have less and less of the staked or restaked ETH, and that's fine. What actually happens is then your APY goes up if people leave. So then there's more incentive for people to come back in. And so I would say he's completely wrong on this. Staked ETH is basically where you can delegate your ETH to, so that you can have this like LST token and earn that APY within that, which is great. Those revenues come from people transacting and doing things on top of Ethereum. Where restaking gets its revenue from is not just like going, oh, right now the chain is creating, you know, about 3% or 4% APY. We're just going to double it and someone's going to subsidize it. That's not the case here. It's they're taking the Ethereum validators and saying, hey, we're going to put you to work in more things than just Ethereum. Now you're going to validate other networks, which is going to bring in additional revenue. And so the additional APYs that you're getting when you restake is actually coming from real, real money. And Bitcoiners don't really understand this because they don't have real revenues and they don't really look into what's going on with Ethereum. And then in terms of the risk, like, of course there are risks. There's smart contract risks and everything. The main risk here, and it's not that big of a risk, is like if your validator goes down that you happen to be supplying the ETH for, they get slashed. And so if they're down for 24 hours, they'll get slashed a little bit. If they're down for 48, a little bit more, and so on and so forth. But it's not like they just like take all of their ETH and it's just gone. It's a slow, gradual slash. And ideally, they would just come back on and keep running it. If they wouldn't, they would then remove their ETH. Otherwise, they're going to lose all their capital, right? But again, that capital doesn't necessarily just like go nowhere. It's just slashed from that validator, right? And then it's actually burned. So that's okay for ETH holders. So anyway, this guy obviously just doesn't understand the dynamics of this. And so I completely disagree. And I just don't ever trust someone that has these laser eyes. If they're talking about Ethereum stuff. They're talking about Bitcoin.
I was like, what? Fair enough. It's nice to have a disagree in the show. We don't get enough disagrees. Okay, next up, we got Koopa Troopa. He says, the easiest way to understand Farcaster is it's Twitter, but everyone has a wallet, whether they know it or not.
I would like sort of agree, but also kind of disagree. It is an easy way to understand it if you're trying to like reach mainstream. However, mainstream people have no idea what a wallet is and why a wallet would attach to Twitter. So I don't think it makes a ton of sense. To actually understand what Farcaster is, there's a couple different layers to it because it's not just about the wallet. So your Farcaster account, when you create it, it's on Optimism. And so it is a wallet and it is minted on chain, right? So you do have that account on chain that you own and you could move it to something other than Farcaster as well, right? So, but that's the only thing that's actually on chain for Farcaster. But the other big difference for Farcaster is that versus Twitter, let's say, is that if Twitter gets shut down, then the application that's on your phone is down, your social graph is now gone, and so is your account, right? Whereas for Farcaster, there's three layers to it. There's Farcaster, which is a decentralized protocol. It is not a blockchain, but a decentralized protocol, kind of like BitTorrent, if anyone ever used that to like, I don't know, get movies and things like that. So it's kind of like that. So it is decentralized just in a different way. And then you have the apps like Warpcast and others, which would be like your Twitter app. And then you have your account, which is different. And the account lives on Optimism. And by the way, Farcaster, that decentralized protocol, is where the social graph lives. So if any of your apps on top of this ever went down, then sure, you couldn't use that app, but you could go use a different app and your social graph still exists because it's on the protocol itself. And then you also still have access to your account because that's on Optimism. So Twitter doesn't have that. So yes, there are some wallet functionalities that exist inside of Farcaster, which are great, but it's also the ability that your social graph is portable and you own it essentially. So I think there's more nuances to what he's saying.
I appreciate the detailed explain that you gave us there, Kaius. Very nice. Okay, next up we have the DeFi Edge. He says, there's a limit to how much money you can save, but no limit on how much you can earn. Forget about cutting back on lattes and focus more on learning how to make money.
I also agree and disagree on this one, and I will explain as to why. I definitely think you should put more time into learning how to generate income because, like he said, there is no cap. And so the more income you can generate, especially if, like, I don't know, if you're really good at figuring out how to get income, then it doesn't matter what happens in the world. Like, if you lose your job, your business goes under, like, you can find more ways to get it, right? If you're good at it. And so it's a very important skill to create. And he's right. There is an unlimited amount to that. There's no cap. So if you can just figure that skill out, like, you're set. That said, there are a lot of people who have a lot of money and they spend it all and they have no idea how to manage their money. And so I think learning how to manage your money and save your money is also extremely important. But that's, like, a first skill that you should learn, is how to save. And anyone can do it. You don't even need to, like, you can make the smallest amount in the world and you still are able to save. And I think a lot of people don't get that. And so thus they don't save. And so I feel like the first thing you want to learn is to save. And then you're like, you want to go all in on creating more income. And if you can do those two things, like, you're so set up.
Yeah, I completely agree with your take on this. It's a good agree, disagree. Like, first step, learn to save. Budget for your life. Everybody should have a budget. Don't just spend your money without thinking about it, like 99% of humans do. And then also at the same time, learn to make more money. And that's why you listen to Web3 Academy, not financial advice, but we're here to help you out in that way. Okay, next up, we've got Bread, who says, people are going to overplay Solana halting or Solana going down. ETH prioritizes liveness at the cost of scalability. Solana prioritizes scalability at the cost of liveness. Both are secure. Both are sufficiently decentralized. People need to come to terms with the chain priority differences.
I completely agree on this. I thought more people were going to be loud about Solana shutting down. There was the day of course. Your typical ETH maxis were kind of, you know, glouting on that. Though I haven't seen much lately, and that's probably because Solana's just gone up to $105 today, a couple days later. And so everyone's just like, whatever, we're still cruising. So I actually thought people would overplay it more than they have, but maybe people are just coming to terms that they're starting to understand this whole idea here. I don't know. But again, like I said at the start of the show, they both have sort of different priorities in the beginning. They're both going to the same end goal, but they're taking different ways to get there. And I think that's okay. Look, when Solana has trillions of dollars on it and thousands of apps and, like, everyone's using it, okay, it cannot go down ever. Mm-hmm. Like, that, like, you need to figure that shit out. But, like, right now, they got a couple airdrop farmers on there, like, dinking around. Like, it's all right. I'm kidding. Solana has a lot of great things on it. I'm not bashing Solana by any means. It's just, like, it's not that important right now. It's okay if things go down.
I want you to drink wine more often, Kai. You're great today.
The last one, Artemis says, Frentech 6 months ago versus year to date, perspective is everything. So Artemis put up two charts here. The first chart shows the last year, 2023 Frentech, and you can see about a 3-4 month period where they are between 10 to, they got up as high as like 70,000 active users. And then you go to the second chart, which shows Frentech in 2024, and they're ranging between like 500 to 6,000 active users.
What's Frentech, Jay? I don't even know what Frentech is.
Okay.
Yeah, like, look, I mean, Jay and I, credits to us, actually, Jay, as we said, this thing's a hype cycle. It doesn't make sense. There's no sustainability in this. And, you know, we were right. Now, that's not to say they can't turn around and figure things out, but their current model that they had just didn't make any sense. It was a great innovation. It did sort of give some signal back into the market, which was nice. Like, this was kind of the thing that kept everyone excited in the late summer and got us through to when the bull market started to come back. So, like, kudos to what Frentech did for us, but their model just didn't make any sense in my opinion. But I they have a V2 coming out soon. Hopefully they make some cool changes, but now they've got to compete with Farcaster, which is on a run. So let's see where things go.
I think this line, perspective is everything, is just such a good reminder to take a deep breath and zoom out. If you ever have a week where you have FOMO that you missed out on a 10% pump, or you're scared that you are part of one of your bags is down 30%, don't get caught up in that week. Don't get caught up in that day. Take a deep breath, zoom out, look at the bigger picture. We're here for the long term. We're building for the long term. There's going to be big ups and big downs. There's going to be a lot of apps that have big hype cycles. Don't get caught up in all of it. That's why you listen to Web3 Academy, because we tell you what's legit and what's not, and we give you the perspective that you need to stay sane, to stay grounded in this constantly transforming on-chain world. That's a wrap on today's episode. Thanks so much for listening in, everybody. As always, please give us a like,
give us a comment. Make sure you answer the poll question on whatever platform you're listening on. We want to know, are you using Solana more or are you using ETH-L2 more? Let us know. Have a great weekend, y'all. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to Web3 Academy, your one trusted source to capitalize on the next big phase of the internet. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and subscribe or follow so that you don't miss the next one. While you're at it, there's a link in the description for our free newsletter where we provide timely and relevant Web3 insights so you can confidently build and invest in Web3. Make sure to subscribe today. One final note. This podcast is for educational purposes only, and nothing we say is financial advice. Crypto and Web3 are risky, and you should never invest more than you're willing to lose. Thank you, friends, and see you in the next one.